This is the SMB Community Podcast, the longest-running MSP-focused podcast in the industry.
I'm Ryan Morris, and I focus on vendor strategies and how they impact the delivery of your IT services and the profitability of your service business.
Here, you'll find practical insights for MSPs and IT service providers, powered by Small Biz Thoughts.
Welcome, everybody, to the SMB Community Podcast. My name is Ryan Morris, and I am stepping in today to host for Amy and James. They are off in the world doing things. Amy's sailing the high seas on vacation. I'm very jealous. James, he's just doing work stuff, so I'm not nearly as jealous of that. But in their stead, I thought I'd bring on Dave Sobel to join me as a co-host. So, Dave, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for being here. It's like a mini killing it as the two, you and I get to just have a little bit of fun. But we get to do it on the SMB Community Podcast. I'm excited.
I know. This is a great conversation. So, by the way, before we get into everything, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, humans just went back around the moon. I don't know about you, but I can measure slightly less productivity in my work days over the last 6 or 7 days as I've been tracking all of the updates and the maps and the trying to understand the physics of the slingshot around the moon. I think it's high time that humans got inspired by space again. So I don't know about you. I think it's super cool.
I wish I was a little bit more following it because the science nerd in me is like super into the fact that that's really cool. And the imagery is stunning. Like the new images of the moon were just super cool. Like you get a lot of your childhood stuff. Like I was into the shuttle during the 80s in terms of like that stuff. So I'm with you. I had to watch the launch on replay rather than live. So maybe I'm not got the cred on this one that I should, but I'm with you. It is super cool to be watching.
And like you say, the single best thing is 4K cameras all over the machine that are taking some video on camera angles that you cannot believe. It reminds us that 50 years ago, the last time we went up there, camera technology was somewhat less advanced. So
you mean they're Vaseline covered, blurry, like, you know, old SD cameras, like, oh, perhaps they've gotten a little bit better. And I also had to laugh at the fact that they're literally highlighting that the astronauts took their own phones up there, yeah. You know, and it's and had Outlook issues, which was one of the best things to come out of the entire, all of us in IT management in any level just had to smile that they had Outlook issues. By the way, two versions of Outlook, both unable to connect at the same time.
All right. So before we get into everything, there's a lot to cover on today's show. We're going to be talking about the evolution of the role of the generalist in the IT industry. We'll also take a quick look at the evolving fortunes of Ninja One as we keep an eye on them as a player in our industry. But before we get into that, I want to pause for a second so we can focus on our question of the week.
How can your business be worth more money without you in it?
See, the entrepreneur in each of us feels very threatened by such an observation. Like, hey, wait a minute, what are you saying, that I'm not valuable? Except that if you pay attention to the actual metrics that an investor, a banker, a private equity, an acquirer, somebody would look at for your business, the things that they're going to measure are scalability. Can you get bigger? Repeatability. Can you do this consistently over and over again with some predictable revenues? And is it something that you could extract yourself from and hand on to a new generation, right? Scale, repeatability, and the assignment to a new generation. That's exactly what we ought to be paying attention to as business people. Feels like we're going to live forever, but we're not going to live forever. And so we need to make sure that at some point we're planning for the future of the business. Not only can your business be more valuable without you in it, but it actually should be. And if it's not, that's a question of working, as we all say in this industry, on the business, not in the business. And we might want to take some time to focus on process.
I'm such an old school Michael Gerber e-myth guy on this. And I've talked about that on a bunch of different shows, but I'm going to go even more old school on this one for this show and talk about a job I don't often talk about. So my second job was at McDonald's. jobs. And I think about that job. I'm what, one in five Americans that have worked at McDonald's in the course of their career, right? I am definitely in that demographic. And I think about that job a ton because I was really good at that job because I was able to walk in and you literally could just pick up a piece of paper that had the instruction sheet on how to do something. And that taught you exactly how to do that job. And you could do every single job in the business by reading the instruction sheet or watching the VHS video they'd made about it, which dates me delightfully. But you could then learn every job. And on my lunch breaks, I would just, because you just sat in the basement for like 30 minutes while you had your lunch, I would watch other training videos because that meant I could do more jobs in that business. And I was incredibly valuable to them as an employee because by, you know, over the course of a year, I could do every job in that store because there was an instruction sheet. That has stuck with me my entire career. That if I write instruction sheets for how to do sections of the job, that means anybody can do it. So it's the principles of being able to apply that anywhere that I think about it, that is the answer to this question, right? If you can step out of the business, it can completely function without you, that's an asset. And that's what you're trying. That's how you achieve that, is just getting to that point.
Yep. Your business will be more valuable, not in my opinion or Dave's opinion, but according to the financial professionals in this world, if it is scalable, if it is repeatable, if it is sustainable into the future. All of that requires new humans who can deliver what you deliver as good as you deliver it. So not only could it be more valuable, it should be more valuable without you in it. Great, great topic and conversation.
Tales from the field.
Okay, so I was working with an MSP, names redacted to protect the innocent, recently. We were actually talking about their method for vetting and onboarding a new vendor. Conversation actually came up when I met him, known him for years, met him at the vendor hall, the exhibit hall at a recent conference, and he was carrying a bag full of tchotchkes. He was carrying all the literature and all the information from all of these different vendors. And I said, okay, of all these cool new things that you've learned about this week, which one are you actually going to implement? And he went through a very detailed process, like this is what we're going to do, and this is how we evaluate things. But at the end of it, the kicker on the whole conversation was, our process for evaluating and piloting and verifying a tool before we roll it out to our install base takes 6 months. To which I made the comment, if you have a process for evaluating new technology that takes 6 months, that's the same as having no process for evaluating new technology. So I'd love to get your thoughts on it, Dave. How do we bring new vendors, new technologies into the stack as an MSP?
Oh, it's such a problem now, especially because it's going to be moving so much faster with, you know, SaaS already accelerated and now AI is going to make it even worse. There's the old school thinking of like very formal, must determine the entire bid, roll out across the entire customer base. And I'm on board with that for some categories. Right. For some categories, you need to be that diligent. I think there's other bits where you do pilots. I think that where you actually work with a particular customer and go, hey, you are our trial on this. You know, we want to actually do work with you. We want to test this out. And you learn together, because I think that is some of the element that brings that expertise that you have and understanding of their business to that customer. Customers want to try new things. They want to experiment too. And if you're the solution provider that brings that to them, that's the bit that I think you add in. But you talked about like a 6 month rollout and then everyone gets it. Well, where's the experimentation? How do I know where it works? And not everything works for everybody. So I think the element is to think systemized. I'm on board with having a system, but it can't be so unwieldy that it's only one answer every time.
See, I'm like you, I was born and raised in the orthodoxy of the stack. We set a standard, we define our offering, we maintain consistency so that not only can we deliver very, very well according to our existing capabilities, but we know when a change needs to be made, exactly how it's going to ripple and affect the rest of it. I am a disciple of the stack in the MSP world, but you made exactly the point that was my gut reaction when I was having this conversation. Speed is literally everything in the industry at this point. AI is creating new tools. AI is developing agents. AI is going to be a way to accelerate every element of our human delivery, in addition to just the raw automation that's going on. So if you take 6 months to evaluate, you're already a generation behind on the cutting edge, and your customers are going to feel that from you. You don't want to be the guy who's stuck in yesterday. You don't want to disrupt the stack. You don't want to lose the stability, but you absolutely need to stay contemporary with what the best practice actually is in the industry.
Ryan, I got to give you my tales from the field this week. So I was having names redacted. So I was having a conversation with an MSP who was looking at expansion. They had actually done natural expansion their own way, up to three locations, but now they were looking specifically to learn about mergers and acquisitions to go through that process. And we had a quick conversation about the ways to do that. And he came back and he said, "What's the best way to do that? Like to do this process?" And I had to sort of laugh and go, "Oh yeah, in 5 minutes, we cannot come up with the best way to do this, because in M&A, there are so many levers that you have to, like, the process of M&A is actually learning about the levers more than it is determining the deal, because you have to learn about all of the different ways that you could potentially change it, because you are going to have to figure out which levers are important to you based on the circumstances. You know, and by the way, you're only one half of this entire deal. You've got to think about the mentality and the motivation. In this case, they were the buyer and looking and talking to sellers. Like, you've got to get in the head of the seller. Like, they've said, "Hey, we want to leave." But what does that mean? Like, and we get into that, and it was actually like, well, they actually wanted to have a job and wanted to be there for 3 years. I was like, "Well, what does that actually mean?" "Well, they want to be sort of a mentor." It's like, "Well, that's not really having a job." Like, so the real takeaway for me that I had to look at this was, is that M&A is so complicated, and we as sort of the engineering types want to come up with, "Well, there must be a way to do it." Like, well, yeah, if you live in the Excel spreadsheet of M&A, you are gonna do it wrong.
that is such practical and terrific advice. Context always matters more than the financials at a raw calculation level. It always depends on life stage, on personality, on intentions, on resources, on capabilities, on our previous conversation as to whether everything is very well documented and systemized as a repeatable process, right? The M&A process is natural. It's not a wacky thing that you bring up out of the ether somewhere. It is the eventual conversation every business will have one way or another, but that doesn't mean everybody knows how to do it well. So it is excellent to keep this conversation front and center for the industry to make sure people actually can do it and be happy as a result of having done it. Because I know way too many stories of people who have sold their MSP and are very unhappy about it.
And there's a certain irony that we're doing a Tales from the Field about M&A when James is away doing business work probably related to that.
Exactly. We live this stuff we talk about on this show.
If the business of tech helps you think more clearly about what's happening in the industry, then the Small Biz Thoughts community is where people take those ideas and apply them, working on their business instead of just consuming information. It's not required, and it's not for everyone. It's there for listeners who want a deeper, more operational conversation. That's all at smallbizthoughts.org.
All right, Dave, so let's move into a couple of news items, because I think that things going on in the industry continue to bring us back to, you know, beyond the philosophy of being an MSP, the real world practice of it. And recently came across an article that was published in VentureBeat talking about the return of the generalist, meaning specifically as AI takes root and we get actual productivity from agents and systems and automation, what we're noticing is the return of an IT skill set that is not very narrow and very deep. I am a subject matter expert on one thing and you will always need me. It's that generalist of, I know something about a lot of things. not enough to be an expert, but yes, enough to use an AI system, tool, agent to accomplish something of meaningful value. So that evolution, right? We heard generalist as an insult a generation ago. We heard it as a don't allow yourself to become not valuable by being a generalist. You must focus and specialize, except technology, ironically, is pulling us back in that direction. I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on this idea.
So what's interesting is because the lens of this is very much AI, right? And the idea is that you have to know enough to look at the answers coming back to go, well, that ain't right. like that ultimately is the skill, right? This is the ability to go like, well, I may not know all of the specifics, but I know this has to fit with that. And what you've just described does not do that. And that, because they're incredibly powerful tools. So I was reading something about AI overviews from Google, right? And it was interesting that they talked about the fact that 9 out of 10 times the AI overviews are spot on. But at scale, 10% wrong is a massive number of bad outputs, right? So you need to be able to interpret that output. And so those of us that have spent our careers being generalists, trying to understand enough about a lot in order to have intelligent conversations of them, are proving to be really valuable. That's the interpretive skill that is becoming valuable to these AI chatbots. So it's nice to be validated. By the way, no one has ever said in my world that the generalist is the only answer, right? Because you still need specialists to do portions of, to do portions of the work. What's interesting now is that AI, both from a communications perspective and theoretically an agentic perspective, is now able to step into some of the specialist role, but you need the validation to make it all work.
See, and I think you pull out a couple of things there. The interpretation and the validation to make sure that what we're getting from the system is in fact valid and valuable. I think that's good. I'll go to an earlier stage in the process. It's also the creation, the curation of things that you can get an unlimited number of inputs and outputs from AI. Content volume is no longer the issue. You can quite literally get everything. But are those things meaningful? Are those things that you're seeking from the system? Are you asking it the right questions? Are you getting the right insights? Are you gathering meaningful and actionable data that can be used for something? If you're familiar with Seth Godin, he's a writer, business thinker, marketing genius out there. I've been following him for many years. And recently he said something that just absolutely struck me in my core. His comment was, there are 26 letters in the Western alphabet, and every speaker of every Western language knows and can tell you exactly what those 26 letters are. But there is not a single person in any of these Western languages who knows all of the words that can be made by combining those same 26 letters. This reminds me exactly of where we are in the evolution of inputs from AI. You can get standard things. Agents can create outputs that are standard, that are repeatable, that are consistent. But are they actually valuable? Are they interesting to people? You know what all of the basic parts are as a generalist, but can you combine them into words that people will care about? That's the skill that we're all going to need to be paying attention to over the next several years. And quite frankly, it's the one thing that AI can't do. So, job security for meat sacks as we go through our evolution of the universe, right?
I've maintained the whole value of what we do is helping customers be productive with technology that is measured by business outcomes. That value statement has been true as long as I have been doing that. And there is doing all of this. And if you focus on that, focus both on the customer and their needs, I think you're going to end up still being successful. Now, what you do as part of that statement, it's going to change. That's going to continually change.
Yep. Customers pay for outcomes, not for inputs. And as long as you keep that at the front of your conversation, you will be fine. And AI will help you get there faster and do more tasks, right? Okay. So let's move to our next topic, because I think this one is It's a very interesting development, and I would argue a pleasant surprise. So you may recall over the last several episodes, James and Amy continue to have conversations around the players in the industry, some of the software vendors, names that we know, tools that we use. They recently spoke about Ninja One. So we did a little homework on where they are and what they are doing in the industry. And to our very pleasant surprise, what we found was that on revenue ARR exceeding 500 million, a valuation of over 5 billion, and a customer base diversified and very broad of more than 35,000 customers. Wow. I did not know personally that they had been quite so successful. So I say a humongous kudos to the guys at Ninja One. Your thoughts? Their growth and positioning in the marketplace. What are your thoughts?
Well,
kudos on the big number, everybody. Now, you always have my analyst hat always comes on and goes, yes, when they tell us what their number is and they are private, that is the only statement you have, is you can't validate that number. And that you can puff up your chest a little bit when you can do that. That's okay. So we just have to recognize from an interpretation perspective. Our friends over at Omnia always do positioning and market share. I think that, you know, this puts Ninja into the sort of top three. For sure, we can have a debate over whether or not it's ConnectWise, Kaseya, or Ninja in one, two, or three spot. And there's a certain irrelevance to that. We just have to, I like to think of them in tiers. I like to think about like top two, the ones that are the leaders, the ones that are the ones in the, you know, coming up, and then the emerging in these categories. And by the way, you also think about what category they are. So for example, you know, Enable, and I have a bunch of disclosures on my website about my position in Enable, including that I'm a shareholder, but like, you have to think about, they're literally moving themselves out of the MSP infrastructure platform and trying to think about themselves in the security platform space. So you have to kind of reanalyze them. If you're building your MSP on a particular platform, Ninja is clearly now positioned as one of the largest platform players in the space. And I think we have to recognize that achievement has changed the dynamics a little bit.
Well, and especially like you say, as they focus on the idea of the platform for endpoint management. It's something that it speaks to two things that I continue to come back to as a business development professional, as well as an analyst in the industry. Number one is adjacent opportunities inside your customer install base, right? It's one thing to manage the classic Wintel stack. It's one thing to manage the endpoint devices and get into the mobile world. But can you do things in the medical world? Can you do things in the OT world? Can you move beyond the classic definition of the WAN and into the operational systems of customers? And can you do that without switching platforms? Boy, that's a very big opportunity for customers. And the other side of it is the question that I've always come back to as an analyst is, are we evolving from point products towards platforms? Are we evolving away from platforms to best in class? My best read on everything going on in the industry is that it depends on where you are. Infrastructure, endpoint, security, business applications, data management, etc., right? As you look into these massive domains, each one of them is having an evolution. Ironically, some of them in opposite directions, right? Endpoints, I feel, are going towards platforms where one tool set can manage many, many different systems without having to overcome integration challenges. But cybersecurity, it's not, right? Everybody's fighting for a single platform to do everything. And it's our job as MSPs to be aware, should we be consolidating onto a platform? Should we be diversifying into specialized products that give us new customer opportunities?
You brought up the magic word integration, right? That integration world has been driven by APIs for a very long time, but we're now having the emerging conversation about MCP servers. And as far as I know, there's not been a lot of declarations from the MSP platforms about what they're doing on that front. So that's an area to watch. It's okay, great, you guys are all getting really big. Are you moving into the next layer as we consider you an orchestration layer? So that, I think, is something to be keep an eye on.
thank you, everybody, for joining in and listening. Please do let us know if you have comments, questions. We'd love to keep the conversation going.
Thank you for listening and or watching. Remember, Dave breaks down the IT news of the day on his show, The Business of Tech, which drops at 5 p.m. Eastern, Mondays through Fridays, with bonus content on the weekends.
Watching this on YouTube? Be sure to like and subscribe so you always know you've got our latest episode. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to use the contact form on the SMB Community Podcast webpage. That's smbcommunitypodcast.com. Or leave your comments on our YouTube episode page. Produced by Picture This Video. Part of the MSP Radio Network.